Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, New York and Pennsylvania are taking sharply different approaches to the booming data center industry. New York lawmakers are moving toward a temporary moratorium on new projects, while Pennsylvania is rolling out tax incentives to attract developers. We'll look at the contrasting strategies and what they can mean for jobs, energy demand, and economic growth. A rural Pennsylvania township finds itself at the center of the national immigration debate. We'll talk with Spotlight PA about how a planned federal ICE facility is raising questions about local control and taxpayer costs. In Ulster County, county leaders, advocates, and community members gathered to celebrate Pride Month with a flag raising. Plus, lots of live music this weekend. We'll get a preview of a new music season at Arrowhead Ranch and Beaver Jam after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Six states held primary elections yesterday. There's a lot of interest in the California gubernatorial race. California has an unusual primary. All the candidates from all the parties run together. The top two finishers then go on to the general election, even if they're from the same party. More than 60 candidates competed in the California governor's race, which is too close to call. The leaders so far are Democrat Javier Becerra, the former U.S. Health Secretary, and Republican businessman and former Fox commentator Steve Hilton. Democrat Tom Steyer is in third place. Steve Hilton has won President Trump's endorsement.
It looks very much as if Californians really will have the chance to vote for change in November and take our state in a new direction.
Steve Hilton was born in Britain and became a U.S. citizen in 2021. The U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for Alabama to use a congressional district map favored by Republicans. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
The ruling means that Alabama's 2026 midterm elections will feature six Republican-leaning districts and one Democratic-leaning seat. In April, the Supreme Court's conservative supermajority all but gutted what remained of the 1965 Voting Rights Act and sent the Alabama case back to the lower court to evaluate in light of the most recent decision. The three-judge panel that reviewed the case all agreed that the state legislature's redistricting plan was based on intentional race-based discrimination. That prompted Alabama to immediately return to the Supreme Court, arguing that the map was partisan, not racially discriminatory. And last night, the state got what it wanted from the court's conservative majority. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The U.S. Trade Representative says the Trump administration will impose extra tariffs of at least 10% on imports from 60 economies. This comes after a probe into alleged use of forced labor. China's one of the economies, NPR's Jennifer Pack reports.
China says it opposes all forms of unilateral tariffs. President Trump returned to office last year, imposing levies on trade partners under an emergency law. Those were struck down by the Supreme Court earlier this year. Now, the Trump administration is starting to rebuild the tariff wall by initiating trade investigations under different powers to impose new levies. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning says economic and trade issues should be resolved through dialogue and consultation. That is in the works, according to China's Commerce Ministry. It said during Trump's meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping last month, both sides agreed to discuss tariff reduction. Jennifer Pak, NPR News, Shanghai.
It's NPR. President Trump says Iran has agreed to not have a nuclear weapon. He spoke abroad in a podcast that aired today. However, there's no word from Iran. This comes as the U.S. and Iran have exchanged fire this week. Iran fired toward Bahrain and Kuwait. Officials in Kuwait now say one person has been killed. President Trump has signed a slightly scaled-back executive order on cybersecurity threats that could be posed by artificial intelligence. He had recently put aside a similar executive order over concern it would interfere with the rapid development of AI. Still, the new order is voluntary. It asks AI developers to submit certain kinds of AI models to government review about a month before the models are taken public. Scientists have launched an ambitious effort to develop new gene therapies for brain disorders such as Alzheimer's. NPR's John Hamilton reports.
The Allen Institute in Seattle is running the collaborative effort known as the Brain Health Accelerator. It's an outgrowth of the federally funded Brain Initiative, which was launched by President Obama in 2013. Ed Lean of the Allen Institute says scientists now know how to tweak a particular gene in certain brain cells.
And that opens up the possibility for very specific precision genetic therapies for brain disorders.
Lean says one of the first targets will be Huntington's disease, a fatal inherited disorder. It's caused by a genetic mutation that tells nerve cells to make too much of one type of protein. Scientists think gene therapy can prevent this. John Hamilton, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. New York and Pennsylvania are taking sharply different approaches to the booming data center industry. In New York, legislators are poised to pass a one-year moratorium on new data center projects in the state before they leave Albany this week. Samuel King with the New York Public News Network reports the last-minute legislation is a compromise after advocates proposed a three-year ban.
The moratorium would be the first of its kind in the country, and groups held rallies at the Capitol calling for a hold on data centers. Cheryl Cordes traveled to Albany from the town of Alabama in Genesee County, where a major data center is planned.
And we don't want it.
The last-minute bill would put in place a one-year moratorium on new data center projects, require an environmental impact study on data center development in New York, and require developers to minimize wastewater or infrastructure impacts on communities. But those opposed to the moratorium are making a lobbying push of their own. Smith Anderson is executive director of the Digital Power Network, a coalition of Bitcoin miners and digital infrastructure leaders.
There's already protections, and you already have to go through a lot of permitting review processes to build any infrastructure of this size. So a moratorium is just a signal to folks saying, you know, we're not open for business here in New York.
Governor Kathy Hochul would have to sign off on the moratorium while not commenting on this specific legislation. She has said she is looking intensely at the issue and that data centers need to manage their own energy costs without burdening local ratepayers. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, Governor Josh Shapiro's office has released a full detailed version of its proposed incentives for data center developers ahead of Pennsylvania's June 30th budget deadline. The proposal would add conditions for the projects to receive a major state tax exemption and participate in preferential tax zone programs. These standards, which the administration is calling the governor's responsible infrastructure development, are an important part, quote, of broader conversations as budget negotiations continue, a spokesperson for the administration told our news partners at Spotlight PA. The plan would require data centers seeking tax incentives to mitigate their impacts on the environment and electric grid, as WHYY's Zoe Reed reports.
Power-hungry data centers are popping up to meet the demand for artificial intelligence, but the facilities use a lot of energy, leading to higher electricity bills for everyone. They also use millions of gallons of water to prevent servers from overheating. Shapiro's plan would create a pathway for data center development by offering tax incentives and a streamlined permitting process. But those perks would only be available to data centers that pay for their own energy use. They'd also have to reduce their impacts on the environment, create at least 200 construction jobs, and invest in community programs. State lawmakers would need to pass legislation to implement the governor's proposed standards. From the Climate Desk, Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
Now a closer look at the debate over immigration enforcement. That debate is often framed as a clash between Washington and the nation's largest cities, but increasingly it's playing out in small towns and rural communities as well. Take Berks County in Pennsylvania. Local officials and residents are grappling with plans for a new federal immigration facility. The project is part of the Trump administration's effort to expand detention and processing capacity nationwide, but it also has raised questions about local control, transparency, taxpayer costs, and the role communities play when the federal government moves into their backyard. A recent Spotlight PA investigation examines how local officials learned of the project, what authority they may have or may not have over it, and why the controversy reflects a much larger national debate over immigration enforcement and cooperation with ICE. Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio spoke with Amanda Fries, regional accountability reporter with Spotlight PA, who's been covering the story to learn more.
So for listeners who are just catching up, what can you tell us about this warehouse in Upper Burn Township, and why has it drawn so much attention?
Well, the reason it's drawn so much attention is because the federal government purchased the warehouse. It was vacant since it was constructed and finished back in 2021. And ICE purchased the warehouse to be used, as you mentioned earlier, as a processing facility for undocumented immigrants. And for the most part, everything's been at a standstill on the federal level because state administration here in Pennsylvania has filed administrative orders through its Department of Environmental Protection, essentially preventing the federal government from using this facility until they are able to prove that the use of the facility is not going to strain any resources, that they'll be able to accommodate, whatever use will be, whatever they intend to use the facility for. And from there, we've kind of been keeping an eye on Upper Burn Township and the progress there. Their last Board of Supervisors meeting, they approved essentially ending a land development agreement they had with the original developer of the warehouse, Transwestern Development Company. And so essentially there were some things related to the facility and the original development that had not been completed. Some of it was just cleaning out a culvert, making repairs to that culvert that runs underneath a road, as well as in their as-built plans, the original plan for the warehouse, they need to have identified where the sanitary sewer line is under Mountain Road, and they didn't do that. So some of this stuff is going to fall to the township now to handle, but they've been paid about $82,000 in order to make sure those things are taken care of.
Right. So where is the project now as it stands? Is it still, I guess, in the planning board stages? Because all these things still have to be resolved before the warehouse is built. Is that correct? Or...
So when it comes to any type of forward movement and development at the warehouse, it's at a standstill because, A, you have DHS having some change in staffing that has kind of put a lot of these projects on pause. Now, we have heard of reporting most recently out of Texas where those projects that were presumed to be on pause are now moving forward in some way, but we have not received any indication here in Berks County or in Pennsylvania that there's any movement forward on any type of use for either the warehouse in Berks County or the one in Schuylkill County at Tremont Township.
Right. And what has been some of the response from some of the either the planning board or the supervisors for the township?
The township really hasn't had much to say. They're following the state's lead on this. They decided not to intervene with the administrative orders that the DEP had put out there that prevents the federal government from moving forward. However, they stand ready to cooperate with DEP in whatever way they can. They just don't have the financial support to be able to do anything and move forward. They're hoping that DEP can kind of handle things so that their taxpayers don't incur an additional expense, which, we have to remember that they've already lost property taxes from the federal government purchasing this building. There's also been concern from residents in Upper Burn Township about the lack of maintenance at the warehouse. It's already, you know, it has grass about 12 inches high. So the question will be, is the township going to end up, you know, going over there and maintaining the property and then sending a bill to the federal government? I mean, I guess they could do that, but will the federal government pay that bill?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they have any, you know, intention or reason to. So I think people are starting to begin to realize what being a neighbor with a federally owned building, what that's like.
I guess they're worried that to be left with this cost of, like I said, maintaining the building and stuff like that. Can you go over a little bit on the sewer line, the sanitary line? Is it an issue that as far as like is not built enough to handle capacity? Is that what's the cause or?
Well, we definitely know that based off of the DEP's administrative orders and the information that was included in those admin orders, that there it does appear the sanitary sewer line, certainly the where it connects to, the plant itself would not have the capacity to take on this warehouse if it's turned into a processing facility that holds, you know, 1,000 people. However, when it comes to the work that the township needs to do, they simply need to locate where that sanitary sewer line is. And they have a general idea. It's not like, oh no, we don't know where the sanitary sewer line is. They know it's under Mountain Road, but they need to do some scoping, send some cameras down the lines, or, you know, there are more rudimentary ways that you can kind of use magnetic rods to identify where these pipes are. So in the future, when they go and have to do road construction, they're not hitting that sanitary sewer line. That's the reason why they need this information.
Now, this $82,000, what happens if it doesn't cover, you know, the township's cost?
They have provided conservative estimates, so they do feel confident that this roughly $82,000 will cover the costs of doing these things. And they have it broken down in the conclusion and ending of this agreement. However, they do also have access to, I believe, about $2,000 in escrow. I don't feel like that's a lot of money left over, but that is a little bit more money that the township would have available should things go over. But they seem pretty confident. Their engineer seems pretty confident in these estimates, being able to cover what they have to handle. And certainly the Board of Supervisors was very cognizant of that as well. That is kind of the front runner and concerns for this township is, what are the costs to this community and to the taxpayers?
Yeah, and talking about the taxpayers and the community, what are local residents saying about the warehouse and the potential use for it being for ICE?
Honestly, right now, it's still kind of a mixed bag depending on who you talk to. Some people don't have an issue with it. They just simply, you know, like they're supportive of the federal actions when it comes to immigration. So they see this as, you know, this is just going to be here temporarily. And then I don't know what they think will happen after. Then there are certainly many others who have just been pleading with local, state, and their federal representatives to do something about this, anything to stop this from moving forward. And certainly I would say that at least on the county level, as well as state legislative level, there are folks who are trying to get answers. Unfortunately, I think there is a lack of information flowing from the federal government to our state and local representatives. And they're just as much as in the dark as we, the public, are.
Yeah. And it seems like that's sort of been the pattern. I remember we discussed not too long ago about some ICE warehouse facilities coming to Northeast Pennsylvania. And we also had a story here in our side of the river in Chester, where folks and elected officials were just And like I said, in the dark, they didn't know what was happening. And sort of mixed messages. One person says something from the federal government, another person says another thing. So, you know, looking at the big picture here, because you have sort of several things sort of colliding all at once here, you know, what do you think this story shows about, you know, when you have local development issues and you have state environmental rules happening, and then you have top of that, the whole federal immigration policy sort of all collides in one in this one project. But what do you think that this sort of this story sort of shows the bigger picture of what's happening not here, not only here locally, but also, you know, nationally?
Honestly, the underlying theme I see is that everybody's working in silos rather than working together. And you saw this straight up to the state level here in Pennsylvania, in the Commonwealth, where you had the historic commission that had this letter from the federal government asking questions. And, you know, from there's a question of who else knew what when. And it's that everybody knew something, but they weren't connecting the dots. And that has appeared to be detrimental to all of us, because I think if we weren't in such silos as we are when it comes to our local, county, state, and federal government, maybe we would have been able to prevent this, or at least have had more of a proactive approach when things started kind of bubbling to the surface.
Yeah. So what should people watch out for next in this story? So what are the sort of the next steps that not only people should watch out for, but what are you watching out for?
Here in the Berks Bureau, we're kind of just keeping an eye on these administrative orders. I do believe there's a hearing that will be happening later this month in June. So that's kind of where things are at. There's also potential additional lawsuits that could be filed, whether that's, you know, by community members or, in other fashions. So there are other things that we're just kind of keeping our ear and pulse on the ground to see what might pop up next, because it's really this administrative order that's kind of slowed things down, and we're just trying to make sure we don't miss anything in the meantime.
Amanda, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know?
We're always trying to get more information, so if folks have, you know, intel that might be helpful, please reach out to me. My email is on spotlightpa.org's website. Anybody at the Berks Bureau or even at Spotlight, we'd be interested in hearing more information, because certainly it's hard to be everywhere all at once.
We'll talk to Amanda Fries, regional accountability reporter with Spotlight PA, speaking up to us about the warehouse in Upper Byrne Township that was purchased by the federal government for a possible ICE use. You can find the story on Spotlight PA, and you also can find it on our website. So, Amanda, thank you so much for this, and we'll definitely be in contact when the story moves forward. So,
all right, great. Thanks so much.
You got it.
And still to come, Pride Month kicked off in Ulster County with a ceremonial flag raising. We'll take you there next. This is Radio Chatsco.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. New York lawmakers finally passed a state budget last week, but what was in it? How will it affect New Yorkers, and what does it mean for issues that you care about? Well, that's what we're asking this week on the Local Edition, and tonight we focus on housing issues in the state. Housing and the New York State budget on the Local Edition, coming up at 6, only on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
This week's Retro Cocktail Hour takes you on a non-stop staycation with tunes by Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66, the Michel Legrand Orchestra, and the new exotic sounds of Mark Riddle. I'm Daryl Brogdon. The music is always shaken, not stirred, on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. It's Pride Month, and Ulster County kicked it off Monday by raising its ceremonial pride flag in Kingston.
Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger, and about two dozen people gathered to mark the celebration. Radio Catskills' Kimberly Izar was also there and has the story.
Yes! Say pride!
Pride!
About two dozen people gazed high to the sky on Monday as the Pride flag went up in Kingston. A crowd gathered just outside the Ulster County Government Building to mark the first day of Pride Month. Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger raised the flag alongside local officials, community leaders, and residents to celebrate the ceremony late Monday afternoon. While Ulster County keeps its pride flag up year-round, Metzger says raising it on June 1st symbolizes that LGBTQ plus communities belong in Ulster County.
It is not just a day or a month. It is an expression of who we are as a county. It's an expression of what we believe in, that everyone should feel safe, should be able to thrive, should not have to worry that they're being discriminated against.
Metzger read a proclamation in celebration of Pride Month's legacy and the continued challenges queer and trans communities face today.
Whereas in June 1969, at New York City's Stonewall Inn, a handful of individuals fought back against oppression in the name of equality and began a monumental liberation movement that continues to this day for the LGBTQ plus community. And whereas each June we celebrate the great strides made since 1969 in achieving equality, while being mindful that such achievements were not made without great cost to the lives and reputations of many, and that we are forever grateful for their sacrifices.
Phoenix Laxton is the program coordinator at the Hudson Valley LGBTQ plus Center. He says seeing the pride flag makes him feel seen and safe.
But in moments when I'm driving and I see the pride flag, a flag that not only resembles me, but my chosen family and community, I feel my shoulders relax a bit and I take a deep, gentle breath. Because it signals to others that wish harm upon my community that their hatred is not welcome here. Hi. Ulster County is filled with queer and trans folk. You can see them walking all over Uptown Kingston. We should feel welcome and protected in the place that we call home. And I have one more thing to say, and this message is really for those who have a lot of opinions when it comes to trans people. We are human beings, just like you, trying to survive. We are entitled to joy and happiness, just as you are. Maybe our joy looks a little bit different than yours, but that's okay. And I encourage everyone to never stop learning and to know that it's okay to be wrong sometimes. Thank you.
Laxton says community organizing gives him hope that he can leave the world a better place for the LGBTQ plus community.
My job is a lot of teaching people, you know, people walk up to me, they're like, so what's this whole they, them thing? And then I do explain to them, you know, I'm at a high school and it's a bunch of boys and they're spinning this spinner that I have of like, guess the flag. And they're like, that's the Philippines. I'm like, it's not the Philippines, actually. But it'll land on the intersex flag. And they're like, what's that? And I get to teach them about what intersex is. And though, like, they might not think about it too much in that moment, but they learn something. And that's what actually matters.
This year's Pride Month comes as the Trump administration has made sweeping federal proposals to roll back LGBTQ plus protections. That includes gutting medical care for transgender youth and ending gender identity protections in federally funded housing and shelters. Eve Papp, board president of the New Paltz Pride Coalition, says these threats are just the beginning.
Unfortunately, you cannot have rainbows without the rain. And you cannot understand peace without knowing war. And our opponents are gearing up for war. The executive branch, headed by he who shall not be named, and he who does not release the files, has openly said on whitehouse.gov that he wants to find radical trans activists like me.
Papp urged the judicial branch to step in and protect LGBTQ plus communities across the country.
To the Supreme Court, which we know is biding its time to segregate us. do your job. One nation with justice for all, not just those willing to pay. People, we need help. We are 1%. We need the other 99% to help us out. We are on the ground, curled up in the fetal position, covering our heads while people with steel-tipped boots are kicking us from all directions. We are screaming for help, and half of the people are standing around not paying attention, while the other half is asking us what to do. We don't know. You figure it out and get involved. We are literally just trying to survive the day. As they say, if you are not being hit by the stones thrown at us, you are not standing close enough.
Kingston will celebrate its annual Pride March, hosted by the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Plus Community Center, this Saturday, June 6th. In Kingston, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
There's lots of things going on this weekend, including a free community celebration at Arrowhead Ranch in Parksville. We'll get a preview of that next. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, ahead of the Men's World Cup, we bring you a new show from Futuro Studios. It's all about soccer culture in the U.S. and its underdog roots.
Why do I watch the World Cup? That's like asking me, why do I breed?
It's called American Football. And that's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. Arrowhead Ranch in Parksville is kicking off a summer music season, and this Sunday hosting a free community event with music, a chili cook-off, a cruise-in, and the unveiling of what will be the final Sullivan Catskill's Dove Trail sculpture. Joining us with more are Michael Moss of Jaketown Road and Marty Weinbaum, music promoter for Arrowhead Ranch. Thank you both for being here.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mike, you want to tell us a little bit about this free community event that's kicking off on Sunday?
Well, thank you. I first want to thank Rose Barnett and Kenny Schneidman. They're pretty much the organizers, and they run the Arrowhead Ranch. So big shout out and props to them. And also, just a little background, the Arrowhead Ranch is also a rescue ranch for larger animals. So that's why we're involved with this community event, to bring awareness to the animal rescue farm. And it starts this Sunday. Gates open at 11:30, and we go till about 4:30. And we have a lot of people involved and a lot of restaurants involved for the chili cook-off. Can I mention some of their names?
Yeah, sure.
The restaurants involved in the chili cook-off is the Neversink General Store in Neversink, New York, Chicky Ribs Barbecue in Liberty, New York, Annie's Rough Cut from Coshecton, New York, the Woodstock Way and Groovy Eatery in Mongup Valley, and the Double Up Cafe right there in Parksville. And they're preparing their own chili, and we have judges who are actually going to judge the chili itself, as well as people who are coming to the event. Just anybody who comes in could sample the chili and vote for their favorite chili as well.
Now, I understand this is a free event.
Yes, it is.
And why was it important to make it so accessible to the community?
Well, Arrowhead Ranch is a part of the community, and they want to be known as a vital destination for local events as well as events outside of the county. So they want to make it everybody aware of this beautiful setting and farm, where, you know, concerts that are similar to like Woodstock on a smaller scale are happening. And to have a free community event to kind of bridge the gap and create more awareness and involvement in the farm is the goal. And also, again, to stress that it is an animal rescue farm. That's very important
very
to the people
important.
Who run it.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. And then, Marty, the venue has also become increasingly active with the community gatherings, but music, Tell us a little bit more about the vision for the venue in terms of your role and some of the music that's other music that's coming up.
Sure. You know, my company is Grateful Talent, and I've been working down in the New York City area with the Bitter End, which is a very famous, iconic club in Manhattan. And, you know, when I moved up here last year, I'm friends with Rose through a Grateful Dead networking group down in the city. And we're actually nationwide. And 2 years ago, we had done a couple of shows at the ranch, and they did pretty well. And I kept talking to her about, you know, let's create Arrowhead as a destination. You know, and just a little history, Arrowhead Ranch started as a hotel called the Lake Plaza Hotel back in the 50s. And in the 60s, the owner had, new owner had purchased the hotel, expanded the rooms, introduced horses, and created like a ranch atmosphere. And then back in the late 80s, Kenny and Michelle Hoff bought the property and reimagined it as a ranch retreat and live music destination. And then in 1991, what happened was Bill Graham found the place, and he created a summer of amazing shows with bands you may have heard of, such as Phish, Blues Traveler. And this is before they ever became real popular. You know, the band, Ziggy Marley, Hot Tuna, Spin Doctors, Radiators, Max Creek. I mean, the list goes on and on. And Bill Graham actually referred to it as the Fillmore of the Catskills. So, you know, we wanted to continue that legacy. So this year we decided that we were going to step it up a notch and not only, you know, have these local bands that we've always had at the ranch, but we're bringing in now bands such as the English Town Project on July 4th, which will be a pre-show for the Santana Doobie Brothers show at Bethel Woods. July 25th, we have a great show we're calling the Arrowhead Revival, which is a bunch of the bands that we've had over the years doing a full-day festival-type show. Then we have on August 1st, we have Chris Jacobs and the Wolfpack. And the Wolfpack is the strings and horn section from Bob Weir's band. Mm. So this is pretty big. And that's going to be a celebration of Jerry Garcia's birthday, which is also a pre-show for the Billy String Show over at Bethel Woods. And there is a connection with Chris Jacobs and Billy Strings, where they have played on each other's albums. And Chris Jacobs sat in with him at the Halloween show last year. And then we have another show on August 15th, Woodstock weekend, with the inimitable Stanley Jordan. And he's an amazing guitar player, jazz-oriented. But what he's done is he created a tribute to the Grateful Dead, as well as encompassing the life of Jimi Hendrix. Mm. And he takes on the whole role, acts like Jimi, plays like Jimi, plus with his unique style of guitar playing, which is a tapping style, it's just an incredible performance. And then, of course, we do have one other show that we're not ready to announce yet, but it'll be a huge show at the end of August.
And at this free event that's coming up on Sunday, I mentioned not only the music and the chili cook-off and the car cruising, but there's also the unveiling of what's going to be, I guess, the last dove on the Sullivan County Dove Trail. And for folks who are in Sullivan County may recognize that these doves around the county commemorating Woodstock and individual organizations or towns put them up and people can go through and see them. They're all decorated by artists. So this is going to be the last one, I guess.
Yeah, Marty will pick up on what I'm going to say, but Hope, Letcher Crony of Hope's Compass, she did the painting.
Yep.
Sullivan County Catskills Visitors Association promotes this event. And then Jessica Weiss of Growing Soul and Rose Barnett of Arrowhead Ranch, they're the actual sponsors of this 85th Dove. And it is important. It's just a lovely thing here in Sullivan County to see these doves everywhere. And the fact that they were going to only have 50 and they got it up to 85 doves is pretty cool from my point of view. And I guess Marty could fill in the rest from there.
We've got one out front at Radio Catskill here, too.
That's right. And this dove is actually named From the Hotels to the Garden. So it kind of gives you the legacy of the area being we had all the hotels up here, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And then, of course, at the late 60s, we had this small little event called Woodstock. And, you know, we always talk about going back to the garden. And that's kind of where we, you know, kind of developed what we're doing at Arrowhead. We want to bring back the music to the garden. So, you know, having this Dove reveal on Sunday brings it all together. And we're really excited about that.
And, you know, there's a large artistic and musical history, as we mentioned here in the Catskills. And what do you think it means for local musicians to be a part of that and be a part of something like this, bringing the community together?
I'll pick up on that. That's a great question. And there is a very, I guess, healthy local music scene in Sullivan County. There are musicians from one end of the county to the other. It seems like we all know each other. There's open mics, there's bands, there's soloists, there's duos all over Sullivan County with lots of names. And some of those people are going to be playing at our show this Sunday. And if I can mention them, Jaketown Road is going to be the headlining band. They're a Sullivan County band, but there's going to be special guests. And some of those special guests include Steve Schwartz from Steve's Music out in Rock Hill, Debbie Fisher, another great local singer-songwriter that so many people know, as well as another great singer-songwriter, Laura Garone. She runs her own, free community event in Liberty called Vapa. And then Greg Fisk is a saxophone player, also a sound man. And then there are two other people that some people know, some people don't, and that's Robert Tellefson. He played with Richie Havens, a wonderful singer, guitar player, and his percussionist. And lastly, a good friend of mine, Bruce Adams, who was just my neighbor, who was an outstanding jazz guitarist.
It's amazing that here, and not atypical, that your neighbor is like some amazing jazz guitarist
incredible.
Or some amazing musician. It happens a lot.
It's kismet.
And I just wanted to, connecting these ideas, and I think it's in the mission for Arrowhead Ranch too, this idea of sanctuary, talking about the horse rescue and the large animal sanctuary that's there. And then also this idea of sanctuary in the music too, that you guys are trying to promote.
Yeah, I mean, look, Arrowhead Ranch, you know, we're doing this music. Arrowhead is a nonprofit. We're not in it for the money. We want, you know, Arrowhead to be, like I said, a destination, not only for music, but also for people to come by and support the ranch. So this is very important to our mission. So, you know, I have done a lot of work, like I said, down in the city and now up here. And as Mike mentioned, there's so many great bands up here. And, you know, as we know, it's a little difficult marketing wise up here. You know, the people are very far spread out. But, you know, with help with you guys and several of the paper media out there, you know, we're hoping to get people to look at Arrowhead Ranch as a destination.
Where can folks get more information about Arrowhead Ranch and also the event this Sunday?
So you can go to arrowheadranch.org, which has all our events listed there. You could also check out my Grateful Talent Facebook page, which has all the events there as well. Ticket links are available. And there are special codes for discounts for each of the shows. And we price the shows. One of my missions for Grateful Talent is to provide fair compensation for bands as well as value for your dollar as an audience member. So we price these shows extremely reasonable, $25, and you can get a $5 discount if you use the code, and you'll find that on the Grateful Talent page. So we want everyone to be able to have access to this music.
That's Marty Weinbaum, a music promoter for Arrowhead Ranch, and Michael Moss of Jaketown Road, joining us today to talk about the event coming up on Sunday, June 7th, and also all the other great stuff that's going on there at the ranch. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
so very much.
As I said earlier, there's a lot of music this weekend. On Saturday, different music, different animal. Beaver Jam coming to Glen Wild. That's coming up next on Radio Chatskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. New York lawmakers finally passed a state budget last week, but what was in it? How will it affect New Yorkers, and what does it mean for issues that you care about? Well, that's what we're asking this week on the Local Edition, and tonight we focus on housing issues in the state. Housing and the New York State budget on the Local Edition, coming up at 6, only on Radio Catskill.
Local news, culture, and NPR.
NEPA Gives starts on June 4th at 7 p.m. Show your support for Radio Catskill and other great nonprofit organizations serving Northeast Pennsylvania. You have just 24 hours to give from June 4th at 7 p.m. to June 5th at 7 p.m. So be sure to make your donation on time. You don't need a Pennsylvania zip code to donate. And every donation gets Radio Catskill closer to its $2,500 goal. Donate to Radio Catskill before 7 p.m. Friday at NEPAGives.org.
You're with Radio Catskill and Beaver Jam returning to Glen Wild this Saturday, bringing together live music, local artists, some food vendors, and a celebration of the outdoors. The one-day festival is taking place on the Wild Wander property and aims to blend music, community, and environmental appreciation. Joining us now is a Beaver Jam co-founder, founding member, Greg Castro, and musician. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Let's talk about Beaver Jam. If folks have not heard about Beaver Jam, first of all, where are they? But tell people about it, where the idea came from.
Well, it's just a couple turns off of Route 17, just down outside of Rock Hill, New York, just down Glen Wild Road. The idea really came from a few things, but mainly the owner of the property has a beautiful property, and there's beavers there, so that's hence the name. And he's dealing with them a lot, and the dams being built and having to be mitigated and whatever, and he's obviously very in touch with the animals, and wanted to do some events down there, so we had planned to basically throw a small festival, and now we're on the third year, and it's grown substantially. It's gone from just a few friends hanging out on a stage to now we're building a big stage, and we've got a great huge PA system and a bunch of bands. We I think 14 or 15 acts coming. We've got a lot of great talent coming, a lot of great artists. We've got great vendors. We've got sculptures coming. We've got people doing live painting there. It's going to be quite a great day of music and art.
The slogan is everything. Yeah. The slogan is one day, all the vibes. What kind of experience are you trying to create for folks who come out to Beaver Jam?
Well, an appreciation of just the beautiful scenery, and also a celebration of all of our local arts and culture and food and music and everything like that. So there's plenty to do. There's going to be a lot of beautiful things to see, and it's going to be a wonderful day as far as the weather so far. So that's what we're aiming to do. I mean, one day is kind of the goal right now. If it keeps going for a few more years, then maybe we'll move to a multi-day thing, but that's also a very complex thing. So that's why we're sticking to just having it, trying to get it all in one day and, make it easy for people to participate, especially the production people and the bands and all that, doing a lot. It's a lot of work from a lot of people to put on a big event like this. So
what does it mean to you, as a founding member and musician, that it's more than a music festival?
Well, it's a gathering of people, obviously, but it's also it's development of the artists and of the people who are participating. I personally know people who the first year saw the event, the second year participated as a solo act, and the third year are now playing with a full band. So that's for our local community, that's great to see. It's great to see people really be able to take their creative craft and go from, like what they're doing, say on a, you might see them at a brewery around here or a winery, and then to say, okay, well, here's a real stage, and here's a real PA system, and there's monitors, and there's engineers, and there's a light tech, and can actually put on a performance, and the audience is there to see you, not as ambience or something like that. So it puts you in a different creative space, and I think that's true even for the people who are just participating as vendors or artists to have the opportunity to do something different or to do something with a big canvas, as you could say, is a pleasure for me to be able to facilitate that.
Your band Electric Chords performing as well. I want to ask you about the rest of the lineup, but just on that note, like organizing and performing, how are you balancing that?
Well, the performance for me is, I have a good rapport with my guys, and we're just gonna, I know that we're gonna have a great time, and so I'm more concerned with the organizing. I could say, the show is kind of like I just enjoy doing it, but Yeah, it's a definitely leaning on the organizing side as far as the challenges and the work.
Tell us about this year's lineup. What can folks expect to hear? Who can they expect to hear throughout the day?
Well, the lineup's all available on our Instagram. It's available on Facebook and also at beaverjamny.com. But some of the notable acts that are people coming from out of town, especially who haven't been here played before, Joey Eppert is coming from the band Three. Joey's from the Kingston area, I believe, or the Three is from Kingston area, and they're a legendary Hudson Valley band. They're going to put on a tremendous performance. We also have a bunch of the local bands. Good for Mondays is playing. Richard Travis is playing. Faith Kelly's playing. Eilish is playing with a full band, which will be great. Shane Renderson's playing. I mean, I'll probably forget all the names if I try to go down the whole list. But
well, that's a good sampling of it. And
Leave something for someone to read online. And
also mentioned
go to the website to find the rest, where you can also find all of the vendor information. You can also find the location, as well as all of the raffles that we have going on. We've got plenty of raffles going on with a lot of our local vendors, including hot stays at hotels, days in recording studios. And I'm talking like really nice recording studios, fully paid for and everything. So if you want to enter in those raffles and have a chance at winning some really cool stuff, check that out too.
You're a good organizer, producer. You're teasing people to go to the website. and food. You'll have food as well. Anybody
yes.
you want to shout out there?
Oh, yeah. Well, Julia's Market's coming for the third year in a row, so that's one of our main food vendors that's going to be that's always delicious. First year, they completely sold out, so we're definitely looking forward to having them back.
And you brought your guitar and going to give us a little song here. Before we get to that, I just want to ask any memorable moments from past Beaver Jams that have stood out to you?
I mean, so many, but, there's... even just the most memorable thing for me is to the faces that I see coming in and being so pleasantly surprised at how things are going. Like the first year, I think a lot of people, they expected kind of like a party, and then it was, oh, this is like a really well-organized, like structured event. And there's like all these bands are really like happening really fast. And it's really, and then the second year it grew to a much larger stage and the production value got much bigger. We're also working with a local vendor, Wilson Showtime Services, for all of our sound and lights, which is a tremendous thing because they're very professional and very good. So, it's lovely to me to see people come in and be so excited at what's happening in their community, and that this is like, their friends putting on an event, but it looks and sounds and is as great as it is.
Do you have some dreams of your local Coachella, local Bonnaroo here?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. It's certainly a possibility.
All right.
Depends on who I can book for next year.
There you go, right? Greg Castro is here.
Sky's the limit.
Talking about Beaver Jam. Also going to play a little bit for us. What do you got?
I don't know. I'll play something.
Okay.
I don't know if you can hear this guitar.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Sometimes I don't know where to go. I try to swim upstream, and when I'm caught up in the flow, it's hard to tell what's real. But then I see you standing there with all your love and all your care. You pour down sweet like honey, babe, and you melt right into me. Loving you is easy. Yeah, loving you is easy. Oh, loving you is peaceful.
Yeah, loving you is easy. Oh, yes, it is. And when I sit awake at night, I see you in my dreams. You're right there where you said you'd be, lying on the beach. And I don't want to change a thing, but then I hear my alarm ring. I don't know how the day will go, no, no, no. There's just one thing that I know. Loving you is easy. Yeah, loving you is easy. Oh, loving you is peaceful. Yeah, loving you is easy. Oh, yes, it is. Ooh.
Greg Castro, one of the founding members of Beaver Jam. It's back this Saturday from noon to midnight. More Beaver, more Jam, they say. It's going to be in Glen Wild. More information about the lineup and the raffle and everything else that's going on, beaverjamny.com. Greg, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break. And, we're at the end of the show. Wait, I'm mesmerized by the song. I forgot what time it was. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruto, and I'll wake up and see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Vintage House, selling vintage clothing, records, books, and toys from the past. A walk back in time on Main Street in Jeffersonville and at vintagehousejville.com. And from listeners like you. Radio Catskill, keeping New York voters connected. New York State's primary election is June 23rd. You may register to vote by mail, at your local board of elections, or any state agency participating in the National Voter Registration Act. Your application must be received no later than June 13th in order to vote in this primary election. In-person early voting runs June 13th through June 21st. Info at elections.ny.gov.
This week's Retro Cocktail Hour takes you on a nonstop staycation with tunes by Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66, the Michel Legrand Orchestra, and the new exotic sounds of Mark Riddle. I'm Daryl Brogdon. The music is always shaken, not stirred, on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. A warming trend for the next few days. Today, sunny, very warm, high near 80. Clear tonight with a low of 49. We'll be up to 84 tomorrow and 87 on Friday. We'll see it drop back down to around 84 on Saturday. Maybe an afternoon thunderstorm possible in the afternoon and evening, actually. And then for Sunday, a more temperate 74 degrees, humid, though, and possibility of a shower and thunderstorm hanging around. On Point is coming up next on Radio Catskill.
Hello, Radio Catskill listeners. This is Andy Carlson, and I'm inviting you to join me Thursday nights for 2 hours of genre-bending exploration of the American rock songbook on Ramble Tamble. I'll be bringing you everything from John Prine to PJ Harvey, Steely Dan to Steppenwolf, and just about everything in between. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
With Morning Edition from NPR News, you don't have to wonder where your information is coming from, because we tell you. Get your news straight from the source every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.